From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Slow and burdensome. That's what President Trump called the Food and Drug Administration's drug approval process in his speech to Congress a week ago. Mr. Trump has yet to nominate a new commissioner to lead the agency, but has called for reducing regulations and getting drugs to market faster. Dr. Joshua Sharfstein is associate dean and professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health and former number two at the FDA. He joins us to discuss how drug approval works and the implications of a new approach at the agency.
There are many, many, many products that people really hope will be miracles, but not all of them are miracles, and you have to actually look to see whether they work.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. In his speech to Congress last month, President Trump blamed the country's drug approval process for holding up medical progress and drug development.
But our slow and burdensome approval process at the Food and Drug Administration keeps too many advances, like the one that saved Megan's life, from reaching those in need. If we slash the restraints, not just at the FDA, but across our government, then we will be blessed with far more miracles.
The Food and Drug Administration was created in 1906. It's tasked with protecting public health by overseeing food safety as well as the safety of dietary supplements, prescription and over-the-counter medications, medical devices, cosmetics, and other products. The FDA is part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. President Trump has yet to nominate a new FDA commissioner. Today we're going to look at whom the president is considering to lead the FDA and how that choice might affect the process of approving drugs for market. Plus, what are the consequences for the FDA of two of the president's executive orders, one demanding that two regulations be cut for each new one adopted, and another instituting a hiring freeze? Dr. Joshua Sharfstein is with us. He's an associate dean and professor at the Johns Hopkins University's Bloomberg School of Public Health. Before his years as Maryland's health secretary from 2011 to 2014, Sharfstein was for 2 years principal deputy commissioner of the FDA. Welcome to On the Record.
Thanks for having me.
What was your reaction when you heard President Trump say that the slow and burdensome approval process at the FDA is holding up progress in medicine?
Here we go again. You know, he's not the first by a long shot to imagine that the FDA is standing between patients and miracles. But the facts are actually quite different. FDA plays a really important role in making sure people know what works. And in fact, FDA approves 60% of the medications that come on the market first before any other regulatory authority in the world. So ironically, he's sort of using the time-worn criticism of the agency at a time when it's done quite well.
Briefly, tell us how the drug approval process works.
Sure. So a scientist comes up with an idea based on their understanding in the lab, their understanding in the clinic. They do preclinical studies, often in animals. Then it goes to clinical trials. There are several phases of studies. They start with just figure out whether the drug is toxic, and then they move on to whether the drug works. And then an application is submitted, and it gets reviewed usually within a period of months to a year by the FDA, and if it's ready, it gets approved. There was just an amazing medicine that got approved for a disorder that I used to take care of in the hospital in my pediatric residency. The disorder is called spinal muscular atrophy, type 1. These are babies who are neurologically normal babies. They don't have any deficits, but their motor neurons start to degrade to the point where they're completely paralyzed and can't move, can't breathe, and then they die. And so as pediatric residents, we became very familiar with the terrible, sad stories of these kids who you could tell it were very, very bright and were just slowly fading. They were in and out of the intensive care unit. We got to know their parents. It was a death sentence. And the first product to treat that has been approved. One of the pediatric neurologists at Johns Hopkins, Tom Crawford, came over and talked about the miracles that he literally saw. He sees as many patients, I think, as anyone in the country. The insight was just a few years ago. It's a very unusual genetic insight that made it possible basically to turn on genes that these kids have. They get an injection in their spinal cord early, their spinal fluid early, and they don't get paralyzed. It's incredible. And that drug, I think, was approved by FDA in 3 months.
You mentioned a minute ago this process checks whether it's toxic, checks whether it will work. Are those the two standards the FDA has to meet?
Yes, safe and effective. So early studies generally look at safe. The later studies generally look at effective. There are many, many, many products that people really hope will be miracles, but not all of them are miracles. And you have to actually look to see whether they work before you can decide. Otherwise, what you get is what we had, which is a market where people are claiming all sorts of things. And, you know, patients who are often desperate may believe it and not only waste money, but potentially risk their lives for different kinds of therapies. And that happens today. And the FDA plays the critical role of saying, wait a second, let's see whether it actually works. In the case of this drug for spinal muscular atrophy type 1, the company was very, very laudatory of FDA, said the reviewers were working late at night to get this on the market as quick as possible. But what the reviewers are doing is really making sure that the product really works. You know, if you think about when we go to the doctor, when you and I go to the doctor and the doctor prescribes something, we aren't in the business of just trying and hoping. We're in the business of wanting medications that have been proven.
And expecting they will.
And expecting that they will. And where does that come from? That comes from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration requiring that companies do the studies that give answers. And if you back away from that, what you wind up is, well, this might work and this might work and we really don't know. And in the end, you just wind up with a morass, which is, you know, more expensive. But the bigger issue is really bad for patients.
You gave an example, an inspiring example of a drug approved in 3 months. But what is the typical approval time?
For new drugs, I think the standard is around 9 months to a year. And it's faster in the United States than any other country. And not only that, the FDA does a more thorough review than any other country. The FDA is, I think, the only regulatory agency that actually gets the raw data files. And so they don't rely entirely on what the company says the data analysis is. They will do their own analysis. They will pool data from across different types of drugs to make novel insights. One of the amazing things of working at the FDA is, you know, you're working in an agency with, like, thousands of scientists who are totally devoted to getting it right for themselves, for their family members too. I'll give you a specific example. When I was at the FDA, I left. I was a city health commissioner here. And at my goodbye party, I made a joke, which it was, I'm glad that I'm leaving before the pandemic flu hits, because we were doing all these pandemic flu drills. Well, a week later, I'm at FDA and we had H1N1 hit. So the joke, you know,
was not funny anymore.
And I was in the middle of pandemic flu planning. And one of the issues was medications to treat the flu did not have dosing for babies. Nobody really knew. And we had a team of pharmacokineticists at the FDA. Pharmacokinetics is a very specific field that has to do with how drugs move through the body, basically work over the weekend and come up based on all these different insights and data and their own understanding with drug dosing for medications that was then picked up around the world. That's what the FDA can do that no other agency can do.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Dr. Joshua Sharfstein about the country's drug approval process, which President Trump has criticized as too slow. What kind of volume is the FDA dealing with? I mean, how many drugs might they test in a given year?
So we should obviously be clear about new drugs versus generic drugs, because the story is a little different on the generic drug side. But for new drugs, I think the FDA approves somewhere around 40 or so a year, ballpark.
And that's how many they approve, but how many do they need to check out?
Most drugs, by the time they get to the application stage, are likely to get approved. Now, that's for the new therapies. For the generic drugs, there is a big backlog, and FDA is not the fastest in the world. And there's been a major effort to get the agency more resources and to more effectively handle the waiting list. And I think that remains a big challenge for the agency. And that has a big impact on prices, because it's generics. You know, when there's just one generic left in the market, then you have companies that swoop in and buy it and jack up the price. And we've had all these problems with pricing. That's really more related to the generic side.
As you mentioned, one of the principal aims of the FDA is to prevent companies from making false or misleading claims about how effective their medication could be. How would you describe the relationship between the FDA and the pharmaceutical industry?
When I was the health commissioner towards the end, I was asked to be on the transition team for President Obama for his first transition. And I had to actually was asked to chair the FDA part of the transition. And that was an experience where I basically met all these people all around the agency, meaning not just inside the agency. We used to say we were speed dating the organizational chart, you know, just to get to know the agency, but also all the groups that deal with the agency, consumer organizations. I met with companies. I met with patient groups. And interestingly, they were all unhappy with the FDA at that time. The consumer groups would come in and say, the agency is completely in the pocket of the industry. And then you meet with the industry, and they'd say, the agency is completely in the pocket of the consumer groups. They're way too concerned about making a mistake to actually take a risk on a drug that could really make a difference. My own experience inside the agency was that, frankly, neither was true. The agency had some challenges, and I think we made a significant amount of progress on a number of them. But the agency really is different. There is a great book by a Harvard political scientist called Power and Reputation, which is about FDA as really a unique regulatory agency, that it has always stood a bit apart from the industry. It's done its own thing. There's a tremendous pride in the agency. It is not, I think, fairly characterized as a captured agency because, in fact, it does do things that companies are not happy with. But at the same time, it is very much concerned with making sure that there are more options for patients and options that actually work. FDA really is its own thing. And people who will look at it and they'll see an individual decision and they'll go like, I disagree with the FDA on this decision. Therefore, the FDA must be totally in the pocket of the other side. They're wrong. Because the next decision that maybe that person's not paying attention to goes the other direction.
There are three men, Jim O'Neill, Dr. Scott Gottlieb, Dr. Joseph Gulfo, who appear to be up for consideration for the job of heading the FDA, FDA commissioner. Two are doctors, one is not. Do you think medical training should be a requirement?
I think that it certainly helps because there is such an important aspect of the relationship between FDA and clinical care. I wouldn't necessarily, you know, rule it out. There have been FDA commissioners who are not physicians, but I certainly think it's important, particularly to be able to relate to clinical care and the challenges that patients and doctors face. I mean, keep in mind the FDA also does food, tobacco, a whole bunch of other areas, but I do think it's helpful.
One of the candidates, Jim O'Neill, is an investment banker and former speechwriter for the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. The New York Times reports that in 2014, at an anti-aging conference, O'Neill said about the drug approval process, quote, let people start using them at their own risk. Let's prove efficacy after they've been legalized, close quote. What do you think of that idea?
Probably the worst idea related to FDA that I could think is being considered right
Why
now.
Why such a bad idea?
I think, first of all, it's very ahistorical. You know, there are many, many examples of products that were initially considered to be okay to use, and then they started getting used far more widely before anyone really knew what they were for and caused harm. The most obvious one would be thalidomide, a drug that was marketed in West Germany for sedation, and it was, you know, helped people. They seemed to be a little safer than barbiturates. And then people said, you know, it seems to help with the pregnancy-associated nausea. And a lot of pregnant women in Europe took it. It was never approved by FDA, but the company was very unhappy with that. They were lobbying. They were saying, look so safe. Look what's going on in Europe. And then it turned out that it caused a very profound birth defect. And around 10,000 babies across Europe were severely disabled. And it's was never really shown that drug that the benefits exceeded the risks, which is really the core standard. Knowing whether something works is a way of understanding safety because you want to make sure that the benefits you're getting are worth whatever risks there are. Put it another way, a product that may have a serious side effect, maybe it can wipe out the bone marrow, maybe it, you know, can do something very, very dangerous. Well, if that drug really cures a type of cancer, that side effect you may be willing to tolerate. On the other hand, if you're going to market it for the common cold, absolutely not. So safety itself is a relative concept in comparison to efficacy. So I would say first, if you're a student of history, you know that's a bad idea. Second, the very concept of safety really has to be intricately related to efficacy. And third, you have to think about what kind of data clinical care needs. What are the incentives you're putting into place so that when you and I go to the doctor, we know whether something works? You will have chaos and the Tower of Babel with all kinds of claims being made and misunderstandings if you don't have a basic requirement to do studies to see whether something works. And let me just say, that kind of attitude, the pharmaceutical industry doesn't support it. It is a what I would call an ideological position, a political position that really has no rationale for people in the business of developing drugs. The FDA plays a critical role for the industry, too. It aligns the market to whether or not things work.
We need to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll talk about some other aspects of the future of the FDA. I'm speaking with Dr. Joshua Sharfstein of the Bloomberg School of Public Health.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. When President Trump met with leaders of the nation's top drug companies a few weeks ago, he told them he would work to streamline the drug approval process so that, quote, when you have a drug, you can actually get it approved if it works instead of waiting for many, many years, end quote. I'm joined by Dr. Joshua Sharfstein, Associate Dean and Professor at the Johns Hopkins University Bloomberg School of Public Health. He was Principal Deputy Commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration in the first 2 years of the Obama administration. How do you think the delay in appointing a commissioner is affecting the FDA?
There are a number of factors that are affecting the FDA now. Not having a commissioner is one of them. You know, the commissioner still has to be confirmed. So even if they named a commissioner, it would take a while for the commissioner probably to be in place. But then these various orders about regulations and hiring freezes. And I think the general sense is that all that has inhibited the FDA from doing some of the things that it should be doing. I'll give you a specific example, which is that the prohibition on regulations without, you know, eliminating two regulations, it's actually a little broader as written than regulations. It includes other kinds of communications that agencies can make. And although exactly what it includes is not totally clear, but the way it's written doesn't just say regulations. And the FDA does a lot of different things, first by regulation and then by these other mechanisms. Guidance, for example. So, for example, the FDA may say, in order to have a drug approved for this condition, we're going to look at whether the patient can get up out of bed in the morning. And if you can show that 10% of the patients can get out of the bed in the morning when before it was 5%, then that's going to count as enough for approval. Right? A really clear test. It's a particular measure. I'm way oversimplifying, but that's basically what a guidance does. It gives a roadmap for how to know whether something is really working. And, you know, there's a certain randomness to results, right? If you say we're going to measure everything about a drug and see if we can see somewhere whether it works, it may not actually be working. It might just be random. FDA's got to figure out whether something really works. So they will specify in advance, this is what we're looking for based on the best science. Those types of documents, everyone wants FDA to put out. The investors want to know there's a path. The industry wants to know what the route to approval is. And researchers want to know so that they can design the studies. Those are things that really are important. If FDA is hanging back and releasing some of those things, that's just making it take longer for the rest of us to get access to medications that actually work.
Is the hiring freeze slowing the FDA down from approving drugs?
I don't know exactly how that is affecting FDA because there's this exception. You know, FDA is a huge agency, like 12 or 13,000 people, maybe more now. They have to hire quite a number of generic drug reviewers. As I mentioned before, there's a big backlog. A hiring freeze would really be difficult for the agency. I think there's like 1,000 vacancies at the agency, so they need to hire. There is some sort of public health, public safety exemption, which I'm hoping the FDA is getting, but if not, it will definitely have an impact on the agency's ability to function.
Do you believe that reducing FDA regulations or speeding up the approval process would save patients money?
I think it's important for FDA to be sure that it can do its job and to do it efficiently and as quickly as reasonably possible. And that's why it's great that the FDA is approving drugs relatively quickly and faster than other regulatory agencies around the world. The main benefit to that is to get new treatments for patients, particularly for new drugs. For the generic drugs, if we could get rid of the backlog, it would save patients money because those are the drugs that are sold for $4 a month. And the fact that we don't have a lot of them approved means that companies can swoop in and jack up the prices of the drugs that maybe don't have a lot of manufacture. So I think on the generic side, it's not so much reducing regulations. It's more just getting the staff to review the applications and figuring out how best to arrange the regulatory process. And maybe that involves reducing some regulations, but whatever it takes to do a good job with generic drug applications quickly, FDA needs to improve there. And I do think that will have an impact on drug prices.
Thank you for this conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Joshua Sharfstein is an associate dean and professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. He previously served as Baltimore's health commissioner, as Maryland's health secretary, and as principal deputy commissioner of the FDA. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Kass. Thanks for listening.